Chapter 22. To Make an Anchor Weep. Despite the pitching induced by the long blue rollers, Harina Din Togara sat very straight alongside her sister, just ahead of their parasol bearers and the steersman at his long tiller. Shallon seemed intent on studying the 12 men and women working the oars, or perhaps she was deep in thought. There was plenty to think on of late, not least this meeting Harina had been summoned to, but she let her thoughts drift blindly, composing herself. Every time the first 12 of the Atha An Mier met since she had attained Ilion, she had needed to compose herself before attending. When she reached Tyr and found Zaida's blue gull still anchored in the river, she had been sure the woman was in Camelin yet, or at least trailing far behind her own wake. A painful mistake, that. Though in truth, very little would have been altered had Zaida been weeks behind. Not for Harina, at least, no. No thoughts of Zaida. The sun stood only a fist above the horizon in the east, and several vessels of the shorebound were making for the long breakwater that guarded Ilion's harbor. One carried 3 masts and a semblance of a high rig, all the major sails square, yet he was squat and ill-handled, wallowing through the low, rolling seas in fountains of spray rather than slicing them. Most were small and low-rigged, their triangular sails nearly all high-boomed. Some seemed quick enough, but since the shore-bound seldom sailed beyond sight of land and usually anchored at night for fear of shoals, their quickness availed them little. Cargo that required true speed went to Atha An Mier ships, at a premium price, to be sure. It was a small portion of what Atha An Mier carried, in part because of the price, in part because few things actually required their speed. Besides, cargo hire guaranteed some profit, but when the cargo master traded on his own for the ship, all of the profit went to vessel and clan. As far as the eye could see, to east and west along the coastline, Atha An Mier ships lay at anchor, rakers and skimmers, soarers and darters, most surrounded by bumboats so cluttered they looked like drunken shore festivals. Rowed out from the city, the bumboats offered for sale everything from dried fruit to quartered beeves and sheep, from iron nails and iron stock to swords and daggers, from gaudy trinkets of Ilion that might catch a deckhand's eye to gold and gems, though the gold was usually a thin plate that wore off in a few months to show the brass beneath, and the gems colored glass. They brought rats, too, if not for sale. Anchored so long, every ship was plagued by rats now. Rats and spoilage made sure there was always a market for the peddlers. Bumboats also surrounded the massive Shonshan-built vessels, dozens upon dozens of them that had been used in the escape. That was what it was being called now, the Great Escape from Ebu Dar. Say, the escape, and no one asked what escape you meant. Great bluff-bowed things they were, twice the beam of a raker and more, some, suitable for battering through heavy seas, perhaps, but strangely rigged, and with odd ribbed sails too stiff for proper setting. Men and women were swarming over those masts and yards now, altering the rigging to something more usable. No one wanted the craft, but the shipyards would require years to replace all of the vessels lost at Ebu Dar, and the expense. Overly beamy or not, those ships would see many years of use. No sailmistress had any desire to sink into debt, borrowing from the clan coffers, when most, if not all, of her own gold was being salvaged by the Shonshan in Ebu Dar, not unless she had no other choice. Some, unlucky enough to have neither their own ships nor one of the Shonshans, did have no other choice. Harina's 12 passed the heavy wall of the breakwater, thick with dark slime and long hairy weed that the breakers crashing against the grey stone failed to dislodge, and the broad grey-green harbour of Ilion opened up before her, ringed with deep expanses of marsh, just turning from winter brown to green in patches where long-legged birds waded. A line of mist drifted across the boat on a gentle breeze, dampening her hair before it passed on up the harbour. Small fishing boats were pulling their nets along the edges of the marsh, a dozen sorts of gull and tern wheeling overhead to steal what they could. The city did not interest her beyond the long stone docks, lined with trading craft, but the harbour. That broad, nearly circular expanse of water was the greatest anchorage known, and filled with shipping and river craft, most waiting their turn at the docks. It truly was filled by hundreds of vessels in every shape and size, and not all of those ships belonged to the shorebound. There were only rakers here, those slender three-masters that could race porpoises, rakers and three of the ungainly Shonshan monstrosities. They were the vessels of wave mistresses and of sail mistresses who formed the first 12 of each clan, those that could be fitted into the harbor before there was no more room. Even Ilion's anchorage had its limits, and the Council of Nine, not to mention this steward in Ilion for the Dragon Reborn, would have made trouble had the Athaan Mier begun crowding their trade. Abruptly a strong icy wind came up out of the north. No, it did not come up, it just suddenly was there full strength, whipping the harbor to choppy white caps, and carrying a smell of pines and something earthy. She knew little of trees, but much of timbers used in building ships. Though she did not think there were many pines anywhere near to Ilion. Then she noticed the mist line. While ships rocked and pitched under that southerly blast, the mist continued its slow drift northward. Keeping her hands on her knees required effort. She wanted very much to wipe the dampness out of her hair. She had thought after Shadar Logoth that nothing ever would shake her again, but she had seen too many oddities of late, oddities that spoke of the world twisting. As abruptly as it had come, the wind was gone. Murmurs rose, the stroke faltered, and the number 4 port oar caught a crab, splashing water into the boat. The crew knew winds did not behave that way.
"Steady there," Harina said firmly. "Steady."
"Give way together, you shore-bound rag-pickers," her deck mistress shouted from the bows.
Lean and leathery, Jadine had leather lungs as well.
"Do I need to call the stroke for you?"
The twin insults tightened some faces in anger, others in chagrin, but the oars began moving smoothly again. Shallon was studying the mist now. Asking what she saw, what she thought, would have to wait. Harina was not sure she wanted the answer heard by any of her crew. They had seen enough to have them frightened already. The steersman turned the 12 toward one of the bulky Shonshan ships, where any bumboat that ventured near was being chased away before the peddler could get out 2 words. It was one of the largest of them, with a towering stern castle that had 3 levels. 3! And the thing actually had a pair of balconies across the stern. She would not care to see what a following sea driven by a Samaros or one of the Arith Ocean's Sohines would do to those. Other 12s and a few 8s waited their turn to sidle up to the vessel in the order of precedence of their passengers. Jadine stood up in the bow and bellowed,
"Shodine!"
Her voice carried well, and a 12 that was approaching the ship circled away. The others continued their waiting. Harina did not stand until the crew had backed oars and drawn them in on the starboard, bringing the 12 to a smooth halt right where Jadine could catch a dangling line and hold the small craft alongside the larger. Shallon sighed. "Courage, sister," Harina told her. "We have survived Shadar Logoth. Though the light helped me, I am unsure what we survived." She barked a laugh. "More than that, we survived Cadswain Melaidrin, and I doubt anyone else here could do that." Shallon smiled weakly, but at least she smiled. Harina scrambled up the rope ladder as easily as she could have 20 years before, and was piped aboard by the deckmaster, a squat fellow with a fresh scar running under the leather patch that covered where his right eye had been. Many had taken wounds in the escape. Many had died. Even the deck of this ship felt strange beneath her bare feet, the planking laid in an odd pattern. The side was manned properly, however. 12 bare-chested men to her left, 12 women in bright linen blouses to her right, all bowing till they were looking straight down at the deck. She waited for Shallon and the parasol-bearers to join her before starting forward. The vessel's sailmistress and windfinder at the end of the rows bowed less deeply while touching heart, lips, and forehead. Both wore waist-long white mourning stoles that all but hid their many necklaces, as did she and Shallon. "The welcome of my ship to you, wave mistress," the sailmistress said, sniffing her scent box. "And the grace of the light be upon you until you leave his decks. The others await you in the great cabin.
The grace of the light be upon you also, Harina replied. Turain, in blue silk trousers and a red silk blouse, was stocky enough to make her windfinder, Surreal, look slender rather than average, and she had a gimlet eye and a sour twist to her mouth. But neither those nor the sniffing was meant for discourtesy. Turain was not that bold. The gaze was the same she gave everyone. Her own vessel lay at the bottom of the harbor at Ebu Dar, and the harbor did stink after the clean air of the open salt. The great cabin ran nearly the whole length of the tall stern castle, a space clear of any furniture save for 13 chairs and a table against the bulkhead that held tall-necked wine pitchers and goblets of yellow porcelain, and 24 women in brocaded silks could not come near filling it. She was the last of the first 12 of the Atha An Mier to arrive, and the reaction to her among the other wave mistresses was what she had come to expect. Linkora and Walline turned their backs very deliberately. Round-faced Niala gave her a scowl, then stalked over to refill her goblet. Lassine, so slender that her bosom seemed immense, shook her head, as if wondering at Harina's presence. Others went on chatting as if she were not there. All wore the morning stoles, of course. Palana strode across the deck to her, the long pink scar down the right side of her square face giving her a dangerous look. Her tightly curled hair was nearly all gray, the honor chain across her left cheek heavy with gold medallions recording her triumphs, including one for her part in the escape. Her wrists and ankles still bore the marks of Shanshan chains, though hidden by her silks now. "I hope you are quite recovered, Harina, the light willing," she said, tilting her head to one side and clasping her plump, tattooed hands in mock sympathy. "Not still sitting tender, are you? I put a cushion on your chair, just in case." She laughed uproariously, looking to her windfinder, but Kyra gave her a blank look as if she had not heard, then added a faint laugh. Palana frowned. When she laughed at anything, she expected those under her to laugh as well. The stately windfinder had her own worries, however, a daughter missing among the shorebound, abducted by Aes Sedai. There would be repayment for that. One did not need to like Kyra or Palana to know that was necessary. Harina favored the pair with a tight smile and brushed by Palana closely enough that the woman had to step back or have her feet trodden on, scowling as she did. Daughter of the Sands, Harina thought sourly. Morale's approach brought a genuine smile, however. The tall, slender woman, her shoulder-length hair as much white as black, had been her friend since they began as deckhands together on an aging raker with an iron-handed sailmistress embittered by her lack of prospects. Learning that Morale had escaped Ebu Dar and unharmed had been a joy. She favored Palana and Kyra with a frown. To Brayla, her windfinder also grimaced at the pair, but unlike them, it was not because Morale demanded wrist-licking. Sisters, to Brayla and Kyra shared a deep concern for Talan, Kyra's daughter. Yet beyond that, either would have slit the other's throat for a copper. Or better in their view, seen her sister reduced to cleaning the bilges. There was no hatred deeper than hatred between siblings. "Don't let those mud ducks peck at you, Harina." Morale's voice was deep for a woman, but melodious. She handed Harina one of the 2 goblets she carried. "You did what you felt you had to do, and the light willing, all will come right." Against her will, Harina's eyes went to the ring bolt set in one of the beams of the overhead. It could have been removed by now. She was sure it remained for the purpose of provoking her. That strange young woman Min had been right. Her bargain with the Koromor had been judged deficient, giving away too much and demanding too little in return. In this same cabin with the rest of the first 12 and the new mistress of the ships watching, she had been stripped and hung by her ankles from that ring bolt, stretched tight to another set in the deck, then strapped until she howled her lungs out. The welts and bruises had faded, but the memory lingered however hard she tried to suppress it. Not howls for mercy or respite, though. Never that, else she would have had no alternative to stepping aside, becoming just a sailmistress again, while someone else was chosen wave mistress of Clan Shodine. Most of the women in this room believed she should have done so anyway after such a punishment, perhaps even Morale. But she had the other part of Min's foretelling to bolster her courage. She would be mistress of the ships one day. In law, the first 12 of the Atha An Mier could choose any sail mistress as mistress of the ships, yet only 5 times in more than 3,000 years had they reached outside their own number. The Aes Sedai said Min's peculiar visions always came true, but she did not intend to gamble. "All will come right, Morale, the Light Willing," she said. Eventually. She just had to have the courage to ride out whatever came before. As usual, Zaida arrived without ceremony, striding in, followed by Shylin, her windfinder, tall and slim and reserved, and Amelia, the bosomy, pale-haired Aes Sedai Zaida had brought back with her from Camelon. Ageless face seemingly permanently surprised, her startling blue eyes very wide, the Aes Sedai was breathing heavily for some reason. Everyone bowed, but Zaida paid the courtesies no heed. In green brocades and white morning stole, she was short, with a close cap of graying curls, yet she managed to make herself seem every bit as tall as Shylin. A matter of presence, Serena had to admit. Zaida had that, and a coolness of thought that being caught by a Samaras on a lee shore could not shake. In addition to returning with the first of the Aes Sedai agreed to in the bargain for use of the Bowl of the Winds, she also had returned with her own bargain, for land in Andor under Atha An Mier law. And where Harina's bargain had been judged wanting, Zaida's had found great favor. That and the fact that she had come straight to Ilion via one of those peculiar gateways woven by her own windfinder were not the only reasons that she was now mistress of the ships, but neither had hurt her cause. Harina herself thought this traveling overrated. Shallan could make a gateway now, but making one to the deck of a ship without causing damage, even on still waters like these, especially from the deck of another ship, was chancy at best, and no one could make one large enough to sail a ship through. Very overrated. "The man has not arrived yet," Zaida announced, taking the chair with its back to the large stern windows and arranging her long, fringed red sash just so, adjusting the angle of the emerald-studded dagger thrust through the sash. She was a very particular woman. It was natural enough to want everything in its place on board a ship. Tidiness became a habit as well as a necessity, yet she was exacting even by the usual standards. The remaining chairs, none fastened to the deck in proper fashion, made 2 rows facing each other, and the wave mistresses began taking their seats, each woman's windfinder standing behind her chair. "It appears he intends us to wait on him. Amelia, see that the goblets are all filled." Ah, it seemed the woman had put her foot wrong yet again. Amelia jumped, then gathered her bronze-colored skirts to her knees and went racing for the table where the wine pitchers sat. Badly wrong, it appeared. Harina wondered how long Zaida would continue to allow her to wear dresses rather than trousers, which were much more practical shipboard. It would surely be a shock to her when they passed beyond sight of land and blouses were abandoned. Of the brown Aja, Amelia had wanted to study the Atha An Mier, but she was given little time for study. Her purpose was to work, and Zaida saw that she did. She was there to teach the windfinders all that the Aes Sedai knew. She still dithered over that, but shore-bound instructors, rare as they were, ranked barely a whisker above the deckhands. In the beginning, the woman apparently had believed her dignity fully equal to Zaida's, if not more, and the deck master's flail, laid with some frequent regularity across her rump, supposedly was changing her mind, if slowly. Amelia had actually tried to desert 3 times. Strangely, she did not know how to make a gateway, knowledge that carefully was being kept from her, and she should have known she was being watched too closely to bribe her way onto a bumboat. Well, she was unlikely to try again. Reportedly, she'd been told that a 4th attempt would earn a public strapping this time, followed by being hung by her ankles in the rigging. No one would risk that shame, surely. Sail mistresses and even wave mistresses had been reduced to deckhands and gone willingly after that, eager to lose themselves and their disgrace in the mass of men and women hauling lines and handling sail. Removing the cushion from the seat of her chair and dropping it disdainfully on the deck, Harina took her place at the bottom of the left-hand row, Shallon at her back. She was the least senior except for Morale, seated across from her. But then Zaida would have sat only one chair farther up had she not gained the 6th fat golden earring for each ear and the chains that connected them. Her lobes might still be sore from the piercings. A pleasant thought. "As he makes us wait, perhaps we should make him wait when he finally does appear." With an untouched goblet in hand, she waved away the anxious Aes Sedai, who scurried over to Morale. Foolish woman. Did she not know she should have served the mistress of the ships first and then followed with the wave mistresses by seniority? Zaida toyed with her piercework scent box, hanging on a very heavy golden chain around her neck. She wore a wide, close-fitting collar of heavy gold links, too, a gift from Elaine of Andor. "He comes from the Coromore," she said dryly, "whom you were supposed to stick to like a barnacle." Her voice never hardened, but every word cut at Harina. "This man will be as close as I can come to speaking to the Coromore without dire need, since you agreed he did not have to attend me more than 3 times in any period of 2 years. Because of you, I must accept this man's discourtesy if he turns out to be a scabrous drunkard who must run to the rail and empty his stomach every second sentence. The ambassador I send to the Coromore will be someone who knows how to obey her orders." Palana tittered and smirked. She thought everyone was like herself. Shallon squeezed Harina's shoulder reassuringly, but she did not need it. Stay with the Coromore? There was no way she could explain to anyone, even Shallon, Cadswain's rude methods of enforcing her will, or her total lack of respect for Harina's dignity. She had been an ambassador from the Atha'an Mi'er in name, and forced to dance to any tune the Aes Sedai piped. She was willing to admit, if only to herself, that she had almost wept with relief when she realized that cursed woman was going to let her leave. Besides, that girl's visions always came true. So the Aes Sedai said, and they could not lie. It was enough. Touraine slipped into the cabin and bowed to Zaida. "The Coromore's emissary has arrived, shipmistress. He stepped out of a gateway on the quarterdeck." That created murmurs among the windfinders, and Amelia jerked as though she had felt the deckmaster's flail again. "I hope he did not damage your deck too badly, Touraine," Zaida said. Harina sipped wine to hide her small smile. Apparently the man was to be made to wait a little, at least. "Not at all, shipmistress," Touraine sounded surprised. "The gateway opened a good foot above the deck, and he stepped through from one of the city's docks." "Yes," Shallon whispered. "I can see how to do that." She thought anything to do with the power was wonderful.
"That must have been a shock, seeing a stone dock above your quarter-deck," Zaida said. "Very well. I will see whether the Coromore has sent me a scabrous drunkard. Send him in, Touraine, but do not rush. Amelia, am I to get any wine before nightfall?"
The Aes Sedai gasped, and making little whimpers as if on the point of tears, rushed to fetch a goblet as Touraine bowed and left. Light! What had Amelia done? Long moments passed, and Zaida had her wine well before a large man with dark hair curling to his broad shoulders entered the cabin. He certainly was not scabrous, nor did he appear drunk. The high collar of his black coat held a silver pin in the shape of a sword on one side, and on the other a red and gold pin shaped like one of the creatures that entwined the Coromore's forearms. A dragon. Yes, that was what it was called. A round pin fastened to his left shoulder showed 3 golden crowns against blue enamel. A sigil, perhaps? Was he a shore-bound noble? Could the Coromore actually have done Zaida honor in sending this man? Knowing Randall Thor as she did, she doubted it had been intentional. It was not that he tried to dishonor anyone, yet he cared little for the honors of others. He bowed to Zaida, handling the sword at his side smoothly, but he failed to touch heart and lips and forehead. Still, some shortcomings had to be overlooked with the Shorebound.
"I apologize if I arrive late, shipmistress," he said, "but it seemed unnecessary to come before all of your number were here."
He must have a very good looking glass to have observed that from the docks. Studying him up and down with a frown, Zaida sipped her wine. "You have a name?"
"I am Loghain," he said simply.
Half the women in the room exhaled sharply, and most of the rest let their jaws drop. More than one slopped wine from her goblet. Not Zaida and not Harina, but the others. Loghain, that was a name known even to the Afa An Mier.
"May I speak, shipmistress?" Amelia asked breathily.
She was clutching the porcelain pitcher so hard that Harina feared it might shatter in her hands, but the woman had learned enough sense to say no more until Zaida nodded. Then words spilled from her in a breathless rush.
"This man was a false dragon. He was gentled for it. How it is he can channel again, I cannot know, but he channels Sidene. Sidene! He is tainted, shipmistress. If you deal with him, you will incur the wrath of the White Tower. I know—"
"Enough," Zaida cut in. "You should be well aware by now how much I fear the wrath of the White Tower."
"But—"
Zaida held up a single finger, and the Aes Sedai's mouth snapped shut, her lips twisting in a sickly fashion. That one word might lead to her kissing the deckmaster's sister again, and she knew it.
"What she says is true in part," Loghain said calmly. "I am an Ashaman, but there is no taint any longer. Sidene is clean. The Creator decided to show us mercy, it seems. I have a question for her. Whom do you serve, Aes Sedai? Egwene Alvir or Elida Arroyhan?"
Wisely, Amelia kept her mouth shut.
"For the next year she serves me, Loghain," Zaida said firmly. The Aes Sedai squeezed her pale eyes shut for a moment, and when they opened again they were even wider than before, impossible as that seemed, and they held a look of horror. Was it possible she had believed Zaida might relent and let her go early?
"You can confine your questions to me," the shipmistress went on. "But first I have two for you. Where is the Koromor? I must send an ambassador to him, and he must keep her close in accordance with the bargain. Remind him of that. And what message do you bring from him? A request for some service, I suppose."
"As to where he is, I cannot say."
The man smiled slightly, as if he had made a joke. He smiled.
"I demand," Zaida began, but he cut her off, provoking angry mutters and hot glares from the other women. The fool seemed to think he was an equal to the mistress of the ships.
"He wants his whereabouts kept secret for now, shipmistress. The Forsaken have made efforts to kill him. I am willing to take Karina din Togara with me, however. From what I heard, I think he found her acceptable."
Harina jerked so hard she spilled wine over the back of her hand, then took another long swallow.
"But no. Zaida would divorce Amel and marry a ballast stone before she sent Harina din Togara as her ambassador. Still, even the thought of it was enough to make her tongue stick to the roof of her mouth. Even becoming mistress of the ships might be insufficient recompense for being forced to endure Cadswain any longer."
Studying Loghain with a stony face, Zaida told Amelia to pour wine for him. The Aes Sedai flinched, and by the time she reached the table she was trembling so hard that the pitcher's spout clattered on the rim of the goblet. Almost as much wine went onto the deck as inside the goblet. Strangely, Loghain walked over to her and put his hands on hers to steady her. Was he one of those who could not leave others to do their own work?
"You've nothing to fear from me, Amelia Sedai," he told her. "It's been a long time since I ate anyone for breakfast."
She stared up at him with her mouth hanging open as though uncertain whether he was making a joke.
"And the service he requests?" Zaida said.
"Not a request, shipmistress."
He had to straighten the pitcher to keep the goblet from overflowing. Taking the goblet, he stepped away from Amelia but she stood gaping at his back.
Light, but the woman found no end of ways to get into trouble.
A call on your side of the bargain with the Coromore. Among other things, you promised him ships. And he needs ships to carry food and other supplies to Bandar Ebon from Ilion and Tyr.
That can be done, Zaida said, not quite masking her relief, though she shot a frown at Harina. Palana glared as well, of course, but so did Lassine and Niala and several others. Harina suppressed a sigh. Some of the details of the bargain were quite onerous, she had to admit, such as the requirement that the mistress of the ships be prepared to attend him up to 3 times in any 2 years. The Jendai prophecy said the Atha Anmier were to serve the Coromore, yet few opinions of how they were to serve included the mistress of the ships going running when he called. But the others had not been there. Bargaining with Aes Sedai convinced that she had no alternative to making whatever bargain she could. Truth of the light, it was a wonder she had gotten as much as she had.
Supplies for more than 1 million people, shipmistress, Loghain added as casually as if he were asking for another goblet of wine. How many more I cannot say, but Bandar Ebon itself is starving. The ships must arrive as soon as possible.
Shock rippled through the cabin. Harina was not alone in taking a long drink of wine. Even Zaida's eyes widened in amazement.
That might require more rakers than we possess, she said at last, unable to keep the incredulity from her voice.
Loghain shrugged as though that were of no account. Even so, that is what he requires of you. Use other ships if you must.
Zaida stiffened in her chair.
Required.
Bargain or no bargain, that was imprudent language to use with her. Turain slipped into the cabin again, and in breach of all protocol, ran to Zaida, her bare feet slapping the deck. Bending close, she whispered into the shipmistress's ear. Zaida's face slowly took on a look of horror. She half raised her scent box, then shuddered and let it fall to her bosom.
"Send her in," she said. "Send her in immediately." "There is news to make an anchor weep," she went on, as Turain raced from the cabin. "I will let you hear it from she who brought it."
"You must wait," she added when Loghain opened his mouth. "You must wait." He had sufficient sense to hold his peace, but not enough to hide his impatience, stalking to the side of the cabin to stand with his mouth tight and his brows drawn down. The young woman who entered and bowed deeply to Zaida was tall and lean, and she might have been lovely, except that her face was haggard. Her blue linen blouse and green trousers looked as if they had been worn for days, and she swayed on her feet with weariness. Her honor chain held only a handful of medallions, as befitted her youth, yet Harina could see that no fewer than 3 commended acts of great courage.
"I am Simela Din Salan Longeyes, shipmistress," she said hoarsely. "Sailmistress of the Darter Windracer. I sailed as fast as I could, but I fear it is too late for anything to be done. I stopped at every island between Tremalking and here, but I was always too late."
Tears began to trickle down her cheeks, yet she seemed unaware of them.
"Tell the first 12 your sad news in your own way, at your own pace," Zaida said gently.
"Amelia, give her wine."
Not gently said at all. The Aes Sedai leaped to obey.
"Almost 3 weeks ago," Simela said, "Amayar on Tremalking began asking the gift of passage to every island. Always a man and a woman to each island. Those who asked for Isla Somera requested they be put off in boats out of sight of land when they were told that the Shonshan holds all of Somera."
She took a full goblet from Amelia, nodding her thanks, then drank deeply. Harina exchanged questioning glances with Mareil, who shook her head slightly. No Amayar had ever requested the gift of passage in Harina's memory, though for them it truly was a gift, with no gift expected in return. And they avoided the salt, keeping their small fishing boats close to shore. So asking to be put off out of sight of land was as strange as asking passage. But what could be so dire in this?
"All of the Amayar in the ports left, even those owed money from the shipyards or the ropewalks, but no one thought anything of it for 2 or 3 days.
The wine had not wet Samela's throat enough to mitigate her hoarseness. She scrubbed the tears on her cheeks with the back of her hand.
Not until we realized none had come back. The governor sent people to the Amayar villages. And they found, she squeezed her eyes shut, the Amayar were all dead or dying. Men, women, her voice broke, children.
Funeral keening rose in the cabin, and Harina was surprised to realize that shrill sound was coming from her mouth, too. Sad enough to make an anchor weep? This should make the heavens sob. No wonder the sail mistress was hoarse. How many hours, how many days had she cried since learning of this catastrophe?
How?
Palana demanded when the keening died. Face distraught, she leaned forward in her chair. She was holding her scent box to her nose as if the scent could somehow ward off the stench of this news.
Some sickness? Speak, woman. Poison, wave mistress,
Samela replied. She struggled to compose herself, but tears still leaked down her face.
Everywhere I have been, it was the same. They gave their children a poison that put them into a deep sleep from which they did not waken. It seems there was not enough of that to go around. So many of the adults took slower poison. Some lived long enough to be found and tell the tale. The great hand on Tremalking melted. The hill where it stood reportedly is now a deep hollow. It seems the Amayar had prophecies that spoke of the hand, and when it was destroyed they believed this signaled the end of time, what they called the end of illusion. They believed it was time for them to leave this illusion, she laughed the word bitterly, we call the world.
Have none been saved? Zaida asked.
None at all?
Tears glistened on her cheeks, too, but Harina could not fault her on that. Her own cheeks were wet.
None, shipmistress.
Zaida stood, and tears or no tears, she held the aura of command, and her voice was steady.
The fastest ships must be sent to every island, even to those of Isla Somera. A way must be found. When the salt first stilled after the breaking, the Amayar asked our protection from brigands and raiders, and we owe them protection still. If we can find only a handful who still live, we still owe it.
This is as sad a story as I have ever heard.
Loghain's voice sounded too loud as he walked back out in front of Zaida.
But your ships are committed to Bandar Ebon. If you don't have enough rakers, then you must use your other fast ships, too. All of them, if necessary.
Are you mad? As well as heartless? Zaida demanded.
Fists on her hips and feet apart, she seemed to be standing on a quarter-deck. Her glare stabbed at Loghain.
We must mourn. We must save who we can, and mourn for the countless thousands we cannot save.
She might as well have smiled for all the effect her glares had on Loghain. As he spoke, it seemed to Harina that the space turned chill and the light dimmed. She was not the only woman to hug herself against that cold.
Mourn if you must, he said. But mourn on the march for Tarmangaiden.